I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's November 7th, and we have a lot to talk about. We're just a few days away from Veterans Day in the United States, which provides all of us with an opportunity to honor our past and present servicemen and women. And it's an opportunity for me to remind you that more than 70,000 U.S. veterans are living with MS. In a 2019 report, the Veterans Affairs Multiple Sclerosis Centers of Excellence calculated that the rate of MS among veterans increased from 141 cases diagnosed per 100,000 veterans in 1999 to 262 cases diagnosed per 100,000 veterans in 2014. That's an 85% increase over just 5 years. And that's why, since 2009, the Department of Defense has invested in MS research through the Congressionally Directed Medical Research Program, or CDMRP, and that research benefits not only members of the service, but everyone living with MS. The Department of Veterans Affairs established the MS Centers of Excellence in 2003 to further its understanding of MS and its impact on veterans, and to promote MS research. Under the MS Centers of Excellence umbrella, around 70 regional programs are dedicated to minimizing disability and maximizing the quality of life for our veterans living with MS. In 2019, the National MS Society entered into a strategic partnership with the MS Centers of Excellence. This partnership is focused on improving care, expanding resources, and providing education and support for veterans living with MS. And the PVA, or the Paralyzed Veterans of America, is an organization that helps veterans, in this case veterans living with MS, access their VA benefits. Just a few months ago, I had a conversation with the co-chair of the Paralyzed Veterans of America's MS Committee, Izzy Abbas. In light of the upcoming Veterans Day holiday, I think it's worthwhile revisiting that conversation. Today, there are over 70,000 U.S. military veterans living with MS. That's why the only federal funding that's earmarked specifically for MS research comes from the U.S. Department of Defense. And the Paralyzed Veterans of America, or PVA, is the only veteran service organization with service officers who specialize in MS, as well as ALS and spinal cord injury. Joining me today to talk about how the PVA supports our veterans is the co-chair of the Paralyzed Veterans of America's MS Committee, Izzy Abbas. Welcome to the podcast, Izzy.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here and look forward to sharing information about, just the issues facing veterans with MS.
Well, some of our listeners may not be familiar with the PVA, so can you tell us what the Paralyzed Veterans of America is all about?
Sure. Paralyzed Veterans of America actually only started in 1946. And I say only is because if you look at some of the other big veteran service organizations like the VFW, the DAV, and the American Legion, they all go back, you know, some more than 100 years. And actually, there was a officer within the VFW who asked the former president of PVA, hey, why has it only been around since 1946? And our president responded, well, that's because life expectancy of somebody with a spinal cord injury was probably measured in weeks, maybe months, but prior to antibiotics being available. So PVA has, it's one service organization that does, you're absolutely right, it does specialize in helping veterans with their claims with the VA for spinal cord injuries, but also MS and ALS. And MS, it's interesting. We have an interesting history with MS because our first president, national president for PVA, Guilford Moss, had MS, and this was back in 1946.
So tell me, I think you've already started to. What are some of the ways that the PVA supports U.S. veterans who are living with MS?
Sure. Well, first of all, I just want to say there's no cost to join PVA. When you talk to the organization, we feel that all of us veterans who qualify for membership in PVA have already done enough, given enough to actually be part of the organization. You know, unfortunately, it's like, you know, you wish people didn't qualify to join PVA, but if they are, there's a home for them with us. And what PVA does is their biggest focus, I would say, is to ensure that no veteran's isolated, and especially if they're dealing with severe injuries that result in spinal cord injuries, or they have MS or ALS. You know, the big thing is to make sure they're not isolated. You know, that's why they're a big partner with the Department of Veterans Affairs for the National Wheelchair Games. That's why they have the Winter Sports Clinic. They don't care what you do. They just want you outside doing something and away from just sitting in front of the TV, being isolated. And so that's our big focus. Overall, PVA, I would say, is they've got, they're very big on advocacy. In fact, a big reason, a big effort behind the Americans with Disability Act was through grassroots efforts of PVA. They're also in the forefront of pushing for execution and expansion of the American Air Carrier Act so that it, you know, it's interesting because PVA does all this for veterans, but the entire disability community benefits for all the efforts that they put into things. PVA also has their own architecture department, and they work with all the federal buildings around the country to ensure that they're ADA compliant. And so those are some of the things that we do as an organization.
So I understand that one in four of your members is living with MS, and the PVA has established a national MS committee. Can you tell me a little bit about the committee's work?
At one point there was, you know, you had to show spinal cord involvement with MS. And, you know, from my lay perspective, I always assumed that the brain was just one end of the spinal column. And actually, you know, there was a, you know, you had a lot of veterans who had MS, but they only had lesions in their brain. Back 2 years ago, I asked Dr. Michelle Cameron, who's the chief of the VA's MS Center of Excellence West, and I asked her, what percentage of veterans have it in their brain and it eventually shows up in their spine? And she said, officially 82%. But we think that number is 100%. It's just that the MRIs don't always pick up the small lesions. That actually expanded. So now all veterans who are honorably discharged veterans who are diagnosed with MS are eligible to become members of PVA. And part of that is once we got that passed, we set up an MS committee. We have Air Force, Army, Air Force, Navy, Marine veterans who all have MS. And what we do is we have 33 chapters around the country. We have one representative from each chapter, and they share information with their chapter and their veterans who have MS on some of the resources and new things that are coming out. And so really it's kind of the biggest purpose of the committee is to stimulate discussion and information flowing both up from the chapters and down from national, what's going on at the national level.
So I guess this is the important question. How can some of the veterans who may be listening to our conversation today, how can they connect with the PVA?
Easiest way to do it is to go to pva.org. That's paralyzedveteransofamerica.org. And there are links on there to connect with a chapter or the national office, and they'll help you find those resources, and they'll find a resource close to where you live. If you have any problems with that, you can always email mscommittee@pva.org, and somebody will get back to you and help you with things. And One thing I did want to point out is we have a lot of people who are coming. They're still active duty when they're diagnosed with MS. They don't realize some of the tools and some of the assistance that's available out there. So one of our big efforts is also outreach with people who are, you know, coming off of what we call terminal leave or they're transitioning out of the military. They're like, look, if you find yourself in this unenviable position, there are resources. We can help you. We can help with you your VA claims. We can help you with different things that are going to help you as you deal with this life-changing disease.
Well, I'm going to be sure to add PVA.org to today's show notes, so it'll be easy for people to find and click and visit the site. Izzy Abbas, first, thank you for your service. Thank you for all you and the PVA continue to do to improve the lives of our veterans who are living with MS. And thanks so much for talking with me today.
John, it was a real pleasure. And I just have to say, I found your podcast. I was diagnosed in 2017, and I think it was probably that year after I found your podcast, and it's been very helpful for me. So happy to be part of it and honored to be here with you, sir.
One question that researchers are anxious to answer is how does the efficacy of autologous hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, or AHSCT, compare with high-efficacy disease-modifying therapies? In fact, there's a large clinical trial underway that will provide evidence to help answer that question. But the results of a small study from Lithuania may give us some clues as to what that larger clinical trial could reveal. In this study, the research team analyzed real-world outcomes for 50 people with highly active, relapsing-remitting MS. 31 of the 50 received autologous hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, and 19 were treated with Lemtrada, a high-efficacy DMT. The study participants who received AHSCT were followed for 4.3 years, and the participants who were treated with Lemtrada were followed for 4.9 years. And over this period, the individuals who were being treated with Lemtrada had an overall higher annual relapse rate and faster disability progression than the individuals who had received the stem cell treatment. In the first 2 years, 44% of the individuals in the Lemtrada group achieved no evidence of disease activity, which is defined as the absence of relapses, the absence of disability progression, and the absence of MRI activity. Now, in that same time frame, 79% of the individuals in the stem cell therapy group achieved no evidence of disease activity. At the 5-year mark, 95.7% of the stem cell therapy group were free of any MRI activity, compared to 69.6% of the Lemtrada group. 75.1% of the stem cell therapy group was still free of relapses, compared to 54.5% of the Lemtrada group, and 90.9% of the stem cell therapy group had not experienced any disability worsening over 5 years, compared to 57.1% of the Lemtrada group. EDSS scores actually improved over each of the 5 years of the study for the participants in the stem cell therapy group, while disability first stabilized and then started accumulating after the second year of the study for the participants in the Lemtrada group. Now, this was a small study, but the results certainly speak to the fact that for some people living with relapsing remitting MS, autologous hematopoietic stem cell transplantation represents a viable treatment option. We'll look forward to sharing the evidence from larger trials as that information becomes available. In the meantime, if you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find the link in today's show notes. We've talked before on this podcast about racial and ethnic disparities in health outcomes for people with MS. And if you've missed any of those conversations, you may want to check out my conversation with Dr. Mitzi Joy Williams in Real Talk MS episode number 183, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. We know that MS has been shown to affect African Americans differently. But today, I want to share research results that may begin to explain why. A research team at NYU's Grossman School of Medicine analyzed immune cell counts in the fluid that surrounds the brain and spinal cord. This is called cerebrospinal fluid. The team collected samples from 74 individuals with MS who were being treated at the university's MS Center between 2011 and 2021. 54 of the study participants were white, and 20 were African American. And when the team compared the total number of immune cells in each of the study participants, they found that the African American patients had significantly higher levels of B cells. Specifically, they carried higher numbers of B cells that carried two inflammatory protein markers, CD19 and CD20. This finding suggests that among people of African descent, the immune systems of those people living with MS are more polarized toward B cell responses than are white people, and that could account for the higher level of disease activity, the faster progression that African Americans with MS can experience. The research team pointed out that the data support the potential benefit of an anti-CD20 therapy that could lower B cell activity in the brain, and just such a therapy is undergoing clinical trials right now. It's a new category of disease-modifying therapy called BTK inhibitors. This new class of medication is the only disease-modifying therapy that's been shown in its clinical trials to deplete B cells in the brain. This perfectly illustrates the benefits of so-called precision medicine. Being able to match a therapy to an individual's specific disease course. In this case, it may represent a more effective treatment for African Americans who are living with MS than any other therapy available today. We'll be sure to keep you updated as science uncovers ways to offset the disparities in health outcomes for members of historically overlooked communities who are living with MS. And if you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. This Thursday, November 9th at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time and 5 p.m. Central European Time, the International Progressive MS Alliance is hosting a global webcast focused on the advances that have been made in treatment and research associated with cognitive challenges in progressive MS. Cognitive dysfunction is common in MS, and experiencing difficulty following along in complex conversations or recalling information are the kinds of challenges that can impact someone, whether it's on the job or at home, on a regular basis. Now, fortunately, there are proven strategies that can help manage these difficulties, and research is providing insights into new solutions for people living with progressive MS. During the webcast, you'll hear from a group of top experts, and you can register online for this free virtual event at msif.org/cognitive-webcast, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. Whether it's those days when cognitive issues get in the way, or fatigue keeps you from fully engaging in life, or a different MS symptom gets the better of you, learning ways to cope with the day-to-day uncertainty of MS is something that actress Jamie Lynn Sigler has mastered. Jamie will be joining me in a moment to talk about a new guide that she's created to help you get past those challenging days that everyone sometimes faces when you're living with MS. Welcome to the podcast, Jamie Lynn.
Thank you so much for having me.
First, how are you?
I'm really well. Thank you. I'm doing really well right now.
Well, that is great to hear. Let me ask you, what was it that led to your MS diagnosis?
So for me, it was a feeling of sort of that right before you're going to get pins and needles tingling in my feet. And over the course of a couple of days, the sensation was rising, making my legs feel heavy and weak. It was unlike anything I'd ever felt before. I was otherwise perfectly healthy, according to my knowledge, was 20 years old, flourishing career, busy life. So, you know, made a quick trip to the doctor to just sort of inquire about what I was feeling. And then obviously was not expecting to go home with an MS diagnosis, but that's how it happened.
And there you were, like so many people who are diagnosed with MS, you kept your diagnosis private for a long time. What made you decide to go public with it?
Well, I think what made me stay private with it was fear of losing my job, fear of being limited by other people, fear of people only seeing somebody that was living with MS and nothing else. And then I think also just overall like denial. I didn't want to accept the fact that this was part of my life. So what led to me coming public with it was that after many years of trying to navigate the ups and downs and the journey of living with RMS by myself, realizing that I was robbing myself of a support system. I wasn't being open and honest with my MS specialist about what I was feeling. I was robbing myself of important care. And so I found myself at a moment where I felt like I had a good enough group around me where no matter what happened, no matter what the reaction would be, that people would know that I was living with this, I had people to fall back on and lean on. And I was obviously pleasantly surprised that when I did become public, I was embraced and all of a sudden, you know, welcomed into this beautiful, unfortunate community. You know, unfortunate that we all have this in common with the MS community, but loving and strong and inspiring group of people that, despite the fact that it affects us all different physically, like we all are so connected with this experience. And I think that that was a huge catalyst for me then to sort of go on this next 7-year journey to where I'm at today of self-reflection and self-acceptance. And through that, I, you know, was able to really find my voice again and lay a foundation for what it is that I need and how to sort of pivot and still accomplish my goals, albeit they might look different or be different, but you know, what are the resources and things that I would need to do that? And so through this experience, I partnered with Novartis on this 3-step guide at reframingms.com, where we talk about the 3 steps, which is 1, reflect, 2, reframe, and 3, reach out. Because of my journey and my experiences, I feel, and my platform that I have, I feel like I have this knowledge to share with other people that are too living with multiple sclerosis and hoping that they can find it helpful in their journey.
Well, the guide sounds really, really interesting. And you know what, when you think about a guide for living with MS, a lot of it tends to be more about dealing with symptoms, and you're really kind of looking at this much more holistically, kind of taking a different perspective on things that you can do for yourself just by making a set of different choices, if you will, that are going to make a difference in how you get through that day.
Yeah. And I think that, like I said before, you know, physically it can affect us so differently, but emotionally we are all very much on the same journey. So I think this guide is really more about that journey. And so in the first step being reflect, it's about, you know, reflecting on your feelings and reflecting on the emotions that can arise from a diagnosis. Like for me with my RMS, you know, from a diagnosis, there was fear, there was grief, there was sadness, there was depression. So like giving myself the permission to feel those things, to go through those things, to honor those things, to have a right to feel those things. And from there, I was able to lay the foundation for what I need into the step 2, which is reframe. So, okay, I've accepted the fact that RMS is part of my life. And how do I move forward? What is it I still want to do? What is this? Who is it I still want to be? So to do that and be that, what are the things that I need? You can't know what you need without you know, going through this process. And then in the third step of reaching out, it's then creating that support system and having the courage and understanding that asking for help is not a sign of weakness. And I always say MS gave me my superpower, which is vulnerability. You know, I think that it's really hard for us to ask for help, but it's really surprising that when you do, you realize that you're not a burden, that people actually like to help, and that there's pivots and choices that you can make that, you know, still allow you to live a very full life. I mean, I'm a mom, I'm an actress, I'm a wife, I'm a friend, I have a very full life. My RMS affects all of those areas of my life, but I make specific choices so that I can still fully participate. My older son's a baseball player. We do long tournaments in Texas and they're hot. They're long walks. So for me to be able to go and not have to sit it out and be like every other baseball mom, I've got a wagon that I can throw all this gear in and I can push and lean on in the long walks, and a neck fan for when it's hot to keep me cool. I love to travel, but traveling involves a lot of walking, and my RMS has affected my gait and my mobility. So a four-wheel suitcase to lean on, you know, helps me greatly. I like to go see live music, but going to a concert sometimes can involve a lot of walking, from even parking through the venue. So having my girlfriends drop me off at the front while they go find parking, you know, the small little adjustments that aren't really asking much of anyone or anything, but allow me to still like really fully participate in my life.
As you well know, living with MS means having good days and days that are not so great. What helps you get through one of those rough days?
You know, I found like just being really open and honest with the people around me. I tend to have the personality of wanting to do everything on my own and to not put anybody out, or, you know, I kind of just sort of hunker down when things get hard. But I've learned that in the reaching out, it sort of helps me sort of process through it much quicker. My husband always says to me, like on the harder days where I'll, you know, look at him and just say, you know, man, today was harder. And he'll look at me and say, but you did it, but you showed up, you got out of bed, you know, you did the best you could. And those reminders from my support system are what keeps me going. And, you know, this guide is something that, like, it's not like you go through the three steps and you're done. You know, this is something that you continually cycle through, because that's just life. Whether you have MS or not, these are steps that you need just to survive life and its hardships. And MS for me has been the catalyst of my journey of self-reflection and growth. I think we all are dealt different things that, you know, lead us down that path. And so I always say I've oddly come to this point where I'm grateful for MS, because I think that who I am today and what I value and how I see the world is much different than if I didn't go through this.
You're a busy person. Besides putting this guide together, I know you're a fellow podcaster. Can you tell me a little bit about your podcast?
I have actually a podcast with Robert Eiler. It's called Not Today, Pal, he's my co-star for many years. That's on YMH Network. And that's what we have out right now. And it's a 30-minute comedy podcast where Robert and I obviously have a very unique experience and bond that we've been through together. And it's about everything and nothing. We give an advice column with we call it our sweet and sour advice. And it's just, you know, meant to make light of things and, you know, remind people to laugh. And sometimes I forget that people are going to be listening to it. They love to embarrass me. I take it on the chin, and it's, you know, we are very much like siblings in real life. So it's a lot of fun.
That sounds great. You know, there's someone listening to our conversation right now. They've just recently been diagnosed with MS. Mm-hmm. What would you like to say to them?
I wish for you to give yourself the time and the space and the right to feel whatever it is you may feel. I ask for you to have a voice, whether that be with your MS specialist, your support system, gather your loved ones around you. tell them what you need, be honest with your needs and yourself, and just do the best you can.
Jamie Lynn Sigler, thank you for using your platform to help raise awareness and demystify MS for the public and to help people living with MS live their very best lives. And thanks so much for talking with me today.
My pleasure.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/323. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.